All right, it's Tuesday,
Sorry.
November.
Yeah, okay,
What?
you've I'm sorry, I
Yes.
forgot to say that your faces won't be shown.
Oh, that's right. Yes, thank
And
you.
so you
Got my
everybody
pen.
can win. So,
Okay, Tuesday, November 11th, 2025. We're still admitting people from the so-called waiting room. We're going to meditate for a little while, about 20 minutes, and then I'll pick up some sort of topic for the day. Like that. So anything I want to mention, we're about to open up the registration for the winter retreat, the one at the end of February in Redwood Glen, where we've been the last few years. So if you've been on that retreat before, you should get an email about it from Greg in the next couple weeks. This weekend, I'm going to be in Nevada City, I'm trying to say it like a person from Nevada, at Mountain Stream Meditation Center for a day long on Saturday, and then a recovery day long on Saturday, and then a half day of loving kindness on Sunday. In December, I'll be at Spirit Rock for my annual Keep Coming Back day long, which is going to be on December 21st, I believe. So those are the upcoming events of note. And that gives us, let's get started with sitting. I usually look at my computer to track the time, but I can't see it, so I'm going to look at my watch. All right, settling into meditation posture. However, that is most useful for you, what works for you. The classic posture is upright and aligned. It's also fine to lie down or stand or even walk. Those are the four classical postures that the Buddha teaches for practicing mindfulness. You can close your eyes or just lower your gaze, turning the attention inward. First, just to feel how you're holding your body and any areas of tension or tightness that you might be able to soften. Releasing the shoulders, letting them settle, softening the belly, letting the breath move deeply into the body, relaxing the jaw so that there's no tension in the face. And so we begin with just this attunement to the body, just this sensations of the body. And then feeling the breath moving in the body. The obvious way is the breath moves is the rise and fall of the chest and the belly, the diaphragm expanding and contracting. Can use the feeling of that movement as a focal point, or we can sense the touch of air at the nostrils. A little more subtle than the movement. The air coming in and out, distinct sensations associated with those two elements of breath, the in breath, the out breath. The breath is a valuable tool we use in meditation, initially just as a way of touching into the present moment, feeling the breath in the present. Feeling the breath brings us into the body. The most obvious way that we pay attention to the body is just through sensations. Touch sensation. The surface of the skin. And then we feel perhaps the muscles, joints, ligaments. As we become more subtly aware and attuned, we may start to feel the body less as a solid object and more as a field of energy. We start to experience this more subtle aspect, the energetic body. You may start to notice how the breath, the way you use the breath, is connected to the energetic body. The breath can help to calm the energies, to open and release energies, to arouse energies, depending upon what's needed to called for. Quality of mindfulness is a quality of observing. One key aspect of that observing is to see the interaction, different elements of experience. So they're seeing the interaction of the breath with the energy in the body. and seeing the thoughts that arise and the feelings that co-arise with those thoughts. Seeing that these energies in the body are connected to the mental activity. Nothing is operating independently. This is a system we're living in. Ordinarily, we are just carried along in this system. Thoughts, feelings, energies. All just pushing us forward. When we bring mindfulness to this system, we become less the passive participants. The opportunity to engage, to interact, to make choices of how we're going to direct awareness, how we're going to respond to feelings, how we're going to interpret experiences. At the heart of this practice is letting go. This is the action that the Buddha keeps pointing toward. Could all this also call this non-reactivity? Instead of just being swept along by the waves of thought, we see thoughts as they arise, or we see them in their activity, and we let go, come back to the breath, come back to the body. When there's an unpleasant or difficult emotion, instead of telling a story or analyzing or trying to fix, we let go of resistance, of reactivity, actually turn toward and breathe with the feeling. In a sense, we try to isolate the different elements of this complex system. And while we recognize their interconnection, we also get to look at them individually. Seeing that each one of them is each one is expressing the revealing the three characteristics of impermanence, of unsatisfactoriness, not self. Every thought, feeling, and energy is in flux and movement. It's never stable enough to bring a sense of completion, though unsatisfactory. And it doesn't belong to us and it doesn't define us. They're just experiences within a system. Right. Well, it was a little chatty there for your meditations. Hope it didn't disturb anyone's concentration. I've been, well, first of all, I'll just say happy Veterans Day for those who, well, for everyone, certainly an important American holiday. So I was kind of very elaborate, I think, in that meditation, and I don't know how much one who's trying to sit there and just pay attention to their breath gets out of having this much content sort of coming at you. But it is kind of part of what I've been thinking about as a meditation teacher lately is the importance of going kind of going beyond the simple idea of meditating to quiet the mind. That's something it's valuable, and it's something I know we all appreciate and long for, some quiet in the mind, and so it's not to diminish the value or importance of that, but it's not the quieting the mind in and of itself is not a sort of end goal of Buddhist practice. It's a We could say an intermediate stage and a building block. What I was trying to point to in that sit, and what I've been thinking about more, what I want to sort of encourage in people is to watch the interaction between mind and body, and all the elements, particularly of mind, as they interact with the elements of body, and see those interactions and see the connections between things that set off the kind of difficult things that happen in the mind, particularly, but also things that happen in the body. And then be able to kind of be aware as those things are getting triggered, and find ways of stepping out of that kind of interaction. And this actually then leads to some quieting of the mind. So quieting of the mind isn't so much put aside. It's more that we take a different route to it. As I really, this ongoing theme of that I've been talking about for quite a while, about attuning to the energetic state of the in the body, which is very closely tied to our emotional state. That's where I think we find, certainly where I find, almost like the root cause of things that inflate out into mind states. The difficult mind states, or the agitated mind states, they start on this more energetic level. And because that those feelings, the ones I'm talking about, are unpleasant, instead of focusing on them, it's naturally we don't want to feel them, so we don't want to focus on them. And instead, we either seek distraction or some some mental solution, like figuring things out or analyzing things. So we either turn away or we go off on a journey to fix it with the mind. In either case, the energetic states are left to sort of their own devices. They are still operating and tend to feed into the thoughts and escapist tendencies, and tend to feed them, not just feed into, but feed them. In other words, they become the engines for those activities that then kind of, this swirl out. They keep building on each other. And the way that we interrupt it is this kind of counterintuitive thing, which is we just turn toward the experience. And very often, this can become a route to that quieting of the mind that we're talking about, because in those energetic states, there are no words. They aren't verbal or even what I'd call cognitive experiences. They are, tied into the nervous system, and when we're able to just feel, much like just being with the breath, the mind can become very concentrated. And if we combine feeling those energies with awareness of the breath, we're essentially doing what the Buddha taught, which isn't this isn't the language that we find in the suttas, but when the in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta, just the first two steps say, be aware of the breathing in and out. Be aware of their length, of being long and short. From there on, for the next, so there's 16 steps. For the next, certainly the next six steps, we're really attuning to the body and the energetic state. So the third step is to breathe in and, or breathe. He says breathe in, breathe out, but I'll just say breathe, experiencing the whole body. So it's starting, with this sort of generic experience of the body. Then breathe, calming the body. So we're using the breath. So that's an important idea, right? We're calming the body. What does that mean? It suggests that the body is not calm in its typical state, and that the breath functions to calm the body. And we can infer that if the body is not calm, that there is some energy in it. So we have energy here. So we're breathing, feeling the whole body, breathing, calming the body. And then the third, or the next step, so it's actually the one, two, three, four, five, fifth. Sorry. Step then is breathing, and he says feeling. It's translated as joy, but it's not a good translation. Piti. Piti is this uplifting, rapturous energy in the nervous system. It's in the body, but the nervous system is in the body, right? So, but it really. I mean, Anolio, here's where, I start to have a little discussion with the Buddha. That, because Anolio says, this is Bhikkhu Anolio, is one of the famous translators and sort of contemporary commentators on the Buddhist teachings, and he has a book on the Anapanasati. He says that if you're just mindful of your breath, if you're just mindful, that a pleasant feeling comes. Now, I don't think he's been depressed. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I shouldn't, just assume that. But it's ignoring the fact that it's quite possible to breathe and feel the breath and calm the body and not be in a good mood and still feel kind of like a not great mood. So what I take this breathing and feeling PT is feeling re now really attuning to the energetic system of the body, because PT is just a manifestation of the nervous system. The next step is feeling sukha, which is a more subtle form of energy. Then after that is breathing and being aware of what it's called, says in the sutta, the mental formation. And what pretty much everybody, all the experts on this agree, is that this means now that we're starting to see things, the interconnection between awareness of the breath, awareness of the nervous system, and awareness of the thoughts that arise in relation to the nervous system. So, in general terms, what we're doing now is we're seeing this confluence of things operating in our mind body. And so, there's a vital idea here, because it means, first of all, that we're seeing that our experience is a construction. It's not a thing. It's not just that I'm sitting here and there's just this thing happening. We realize that it's a construction. It's a coming together of things, coming together of body and mind and all the different elements of body and mind, of the nervous system, of the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral experience of the through that of the thoughts that show up. And of course, for each of us, our history and our karmic history, our background, all our conditioning, all this is now starting to come together. So seeing that it's a construct is one of the vital parts of seeing that it's not self, okay? Just, not don't have to get too complicated and worrying about that. But it's like, oh, if this experience of me is just a bunch of things coming together, then it isn't a solid thing. It's a bunch of things that come together and work, in a they are in constant flux, and eventually they fall off the table. So this is the insight that comes from this, but it also means that we have this opportunity then. I was saying this in the meditation, and again going back to this, to see that I can select individual aspects of this construction to pay attention to. And if I can get at something that seems to be a kind of a root cause, then I can interrupt the construction of the unwholesome states, which is what, I'm interested in. Thank you. And so once again, I mean, I'm circling back to the same place that I'm starting from, which is that I see that this construction, which, manifests partly as a mood or an emotional state, and a mental state in the sense of the thoughts that are, operating around this mood and state, that when I can select individual components of it, particularly the nonverbal components, especially the breath and the nervous system and the energies, then I can interrupt the what's called papancha, the proliferation that spins out. I can interrupt it by, it's almost like a reverse evolution. It's Devo, de-evolving, going back to like, oh, there's just this energy. I don't have to make it into a story. There's just this breath and this energy. I can breathe and just be with this feeling and feel its dynamic quality, feel its impermanent quality, feel its impersonal quality, and not jump on it and ride off into my story. Now, this is not a prescription for solving our problems. And it's not something that happens. There can be I don't want to, I don't know if I can say instantaneous, but there can be an immediate impact. There is an immediate impact from making this shift. But the power of these underlying energies doesn't just dissipate because we get concentrated for a few moments on the on them. They have lifespans of their own. And a lot of the work with this is to be able to stick with that lifespan, to not give up, to not drop, to not sort of relapse into the habitual ways of reacting, of seeking distraction, of indulging, of overwhelm. This is just where I keep pointing to in my own practice and in my teaching these days, to seeing this construction, seeing things, seeing experiences constructed, and trying to remind myself to stay with these underlying elements, the energies that are manifesting into mind states and emotional states and mental, thought forms, using this very clinical language. And as much as possible, just staying with, oh, okay, there's just this feeling. It's just this, okay, this is here right now, and this is it's work, and it's not easy. I kind of feel like it occurs to me that because this is meant to be a gathering of people in recovery, that connecting this with addiction is perhaps another thing I could do. Because that end point that our mind gets to, if we don't sort of see this coming together, this construction, if we just are kind of riding that wave of energies and thoughts and emotions, for an addict, it can be, oh, the way out of this, the way to solve this is to get loaded. And indeed, that's the same thing I'm talking about here, to bring it into less abstract terms, which, it feels like if you didn't know what I was talking about, you might not have understood what I was talking about. So to start from the other end of this, rather than talking about the construction of it, to talk about like the drinking and using, where does that come from? Where is that compulsion coming from? And it's coming from this confluence of feelings, thoughts, habitual reactivity, and a lot of aversion, not wanting to feel what we're feeling. And, in practical terms, not having any other solution. That's That's certainly the story, I think, for most of us, is that, we learned at some point in our lives, you often fairly early in our lives, that there was this way out from this difficult state that we were living in. And once we found that way out, it just seemed like it made sense. It seemed like a good idea to keep taking that way out because we didn't have any other way of dealing with it. And so recovery, of course, means that we are faced with all that energy that we used to run off with into addictive behavior. And now it's just here. And so, recovery programs, 12-step program have ways of helping us to work with that. First of all, having a community, because one of the big problems with all of this is that it's just happening in my head. There's no perspective, there's no love around it, there's no connection around it. So just having a community is like, ah, I'm going crazy. Oh yeah, we're all going crazy. Oh, okay. So I'm just a, another crazy person. That's okay. That's better than being the crazy person. But the whole, the process of the 12 steps, turning it over, this is st saying, oh, there's got to be another way to deal with this stuff, this energy, this craving. There's got to be some kind of other, rather than just following my well-worn pathway, there must be another way. And the 12 steps say God, but that's a really broad term. And in Buddhism, we would say the Eightfold Path. And so that's this very intentional way of stepping out of this ordinary way of operating and making very intentional choices to no, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do this, and being very intentional about how we operate in the world. And the whole, I guess I'm going through the 12 steps now, so the whole then inventory process is to kind of like deconstruct how we got here, right? Which is what I was just doing in terms of, putting it in terms of Buddhist practice and the Anapanasati and energies and feelings and thoughts and habitual behaviors. All of this is getting deconstructed in the inventory process. And indeed, to me, meditation gives us a kind of another level of exploring the inventory process so that we're not, it's not just, oh, what did I do and what happened in my life, but it's really exploring the inner world and seeing that how things come together in our mind and our body and our energetic states. And that then sort of carries through when you work through the whole of that inventory process, that in step six and seven is the letting go process, trying to let go of these habitual ways, which is actually what we were trying to do in step three. So it's, there's these kind of ways in which the 12 steps reiterate stages of the process, because step four is like a deeper level of step one. Step one, admitting we were powerless over alcohol, is the beginning of an inventory process. And then step four is this more elaborated form of the inventory. And so step three is the letting go, turning it over to God. But step seven, humbly having God remove your defects, is where you actually kind of sink your teeth into that process. And then the last three steps are these sort of ways of trying to maintain and keep this connection to this work going in an ongoing way, because It's not once and done. It's a continuous process because of the deeply conditioned nature of our addiction and our mind states that they aren't uprooted just by one sort of time through the steps. I'll just say it in the simplest terms. They require a real vigilance, and it's the same thing that the Eightfold Path is demanding of us, that to maintain mindfulness, to try to cultivate loving kindness, to observe our experience through the lens of wisdom, rather than through the lens of ego and self. So I guess if I'm talking about anything, if I can summarize what I'm talking about this way in which experience is constructed, and the way in which our mind states and activities come out of a variety of impulses, and that are founded in this conditioning and the nervous system and the reactive patterns, and to take that apart and to see it allows us then to have more agency in relation to all these disparate elements. I'm having a very strange experience because I can't see the screen very well, and so I'm like, if you notice that I'm not looking at the screen, it's because like I've been just like it's just like a fuzzy thing. I mean, I can see who's here, kind of, but it's not pleasant. So. Anyway, we have some time left for people to comment if they would like to. So I will open it up for any thoughts or reflections. There we go, Vicky. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see Pam was in first in line there. I'll come back to you. Hi, Pam.
Hi, and thank you so much. That was a lot.
Yeah,
And
and then it might have been too much.
no, but I was just going to comment that there's a lot to unpack there, but
Yeah.
one thing that I was thinking was you used the word construct or t a construction, you know, as and I and then you used later a word, the word confluence. And I kind of like that word better because I understood, oh, it's a confluence of everything.
Nice.
And it also has give it gives me a feeling of flow,
Right.
and that there's this confluence of factors, I guess, and we can investigate, understand, and then let go into the flow, let it go into the stream of impermanence, to just to let it go, let the confluence
Yeah.
keep confluencing.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Pam. I think that's a good distinction because it's true that a construct sounds like something that gets built and then it's there. And that's not what we're talking about. A confluence is like things are coming together, but we sense that they're in a flow and that they're still changing even as they come together. Because the next thing they do is they fall apart. Yeah. Hey, Vicky.
There we go.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, great, great, great. Good to be with you. Yeah, I have some notes here. Relieve me of the bondage of self, you know, and also the entirely ready, like you were just saying. You know, the these, you know, when I have moments during meditation or sort of just spontaneously of this relief. You know, these things are experiences that are very powerful, and I'm wondering whether PT may be tied into that sense of relief. When, you know, when I have these experiences, especially on retreat, you know.
Well, PT, according to the The text, and according to the analyses, arises when the five hindrances are put in abeyance. So, yes, the answer to your wondering is yes, that's right. That it does show up. It's rather than, oh, I'm going to generate some PT, it's more
Right.
like, oh, I'm going to let go of the obstructions to PT, and then which implies that it's already there, or it's sort of there in some nascent state, some ready to be awakened state.
So it's not, it doesn't seem like a mood.
It doesn't, not to me. I do not accept the term joy, as a, because that's, to me, it's an emotion. That's a kind of happiness, and I think you can experience PT without being in a good mood.
Right. Yeah, as you were saying, and then maybe this is another thing, but maybe not. I'm working with some people on fourth steps, fourth and fifth, and fooling around with the habitual discourse really that comes up over and over that's unwholesome. And how these things, I mean, we have habits of mind, right? And they arise. And to be able to see them and not take them as, solid truth or, things like this, to be able to see them as, well, as Pam was saying, a kind of confluence. Although, I mean, that was an interesting thing she was saying. Yeah, there's the flow, but then there's also the very repetitive, mechanical feel of what we call defects, right? These habits that
It's
are
not
like,
just random.
no, and it's repetitive and kind of, it feels solid. It feel, you know, there's a kind of constructed quality that seems like, oh yeah, and that's scary compared to like the sense of confluence, which is the moving energy. And, that's like a little bit advanced, to anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's conditioning, conditioning is,
So anyway, it's, ongoingly fascinating. And thank you.
indeed.
Yeah.
Thanks, Vicky. Liz, hello.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
I'm fairly new to recovery and to your work. I have a question that's basic. Can you explain the difference between a feeling state and an emotional state? As I work with deconstructing all of this, I'm not clear.
Thank you. And a really important question, and one that is not addressed enough. It's not addressed directly in Buddhist teachings, so we have to kind of unpack certain teachings to put that together. So the easier thing, feeling in Buddhism, technically just refers to whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, which means that it doesn't take into account the flavor of it. And my example of this is that I like chocolate and I like potatoes au gratin. So those are both pleasant to me. They bring about pleasant feelings, but they do not taste the same. So the Buddha isn't that interested in the particulars of taste, apparently. But what he's interested in is the feeling of liking, because the feeling of liking leads to craving. So that's the critical thing about liking and disliking, that they lead to craving and aversion, and craving and aversion are the roots of suffering. So then emotions are more complex than that. Emotions bring together feeling, the feeling tone, we call that, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, with physical experiences, and then mental habits like a cognitive framework that so when I have an emotion, I na when your therapist says, what are you feeling? They're asking you to put a name on this collection of experiences that are coming together as an emotion. And so the name is actually part of the emotion itself. Without the name, it doesn't have meaning. And so I see that a meaning has a value. It's useful to say, oh, I'm in this emotional state, and then being able to work with that. But it also has a unhelpful aspect, which is that it creates it as a thing which seems solid, and then we feel like we have to do something about it, or we can, we have a relationship to this thing. So, and that relationship is either one of liking, if it's happy, or not liking. And that then creates another, what I call the feedback loop between the feeling and the thought. And the thought and the feeling, they keep triggering. When I have an unpleasant emotion, then I think, oh, this is terrible, I hate this. Then that feeds into the unpleasantness because I feel worse. Because not only do I have pain, but I have a mental resistance to the pain. So emotions are much more complex than feeling is the bottom line. And so feeling, if you can just stay on the feeling, and I would say and the physical level, you avoid a lot of the distress that comes when emotions, well, I shouldn't, I won't say avoid, you ameliorate, you can reduce the pain of the emotion. Because it's not that by shifting my mindfulness and seeing the construction that the thing goes away. I wish. But your relationship to it changes. And that's really important. I have a history of depression, and my relationship to depression is this fraught relationship, that's tied up with fear. And I don't even like the term self-hatred, but really hating being alive, and just all this distress and a projection about, oh, who I am, just it's very messy. So when I can have a depressed feeling, but kind of keep it in this framework of like, oh yeah, this is unpleasant, and I know where it's coming from, and I know, and it's kind of made up of these things, and now I'm gonna go grocery shopping. Like, now I'm gonna do something. Now I'm gonna go to the gym or whatever, now I'm gonna go on with my life. Now I'm gonna go to a meeting, or then rather than the feeling of like, oh, I'm in this mood, I might as well just give up, I'm able to kind of like, okay, it's here, and it's okay. I don't have to freak out. So it's complicated.
Thank you so much for
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I
Thanks, Liz.
appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay. I see one more hand, and it seems to be John.
Hi. Thank you
John.
for that, Shalee, Kevin. As every time is good for me. I get a lot out of this. I look forward to it. And I'm grateful that the Sangha is here. Yeah. But so recovery, right? And magical thinking. Yeah. And some of us, well, your story as well, Kevin, we're getting high while we had some kind of spiritual practice or spiritual belief. It didn't fix us, right?
Right.
And for decades, I'd be in and out, in and out, in and out, because I had strong resistance to people. In meetings, sometimes I'll say, "Hi, my name's John. I love drugs and alcohol, and I hate people," because that's true root of me. And that's based on early development in the family that wasn't so terrific, and that the experience of that, and my need to hold on to an identity through that. And so, through that craving and all that good stuff, I develop a delusional identity that has a delusional solution. What's more impermanent than chasing a drug, right? I sit down finally because I have two options, and one really tells the truth about me. I'm not going to love you because I love drugs and alcohol. And so I'm getting to this, I'll try to cut to the quick. I finally got a guy to be a sponsor, like a real sponsor. I have temporary sponsors, and I sat down and I said, listen, I'd much rather be in Europe drinking wine and having fine food and discovering beautiful places and spaces. But I'm getting out of the way and I'm going to do whatever you tell me to do. That willingness, that key of willingness is there. Otherwise, I say today that my life is the most amazing. I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life, and I have nothing to do with it. I did, though, had that key of willingness. And so we go through the steps, boom, 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 and we wind up at step 12. And the guy says, listen, you're ready to sponsor. And I said, what? Are you crazy? And here's the point I'm trying to get to, that in all spiritual traditions, there can be a trap of magical thinking. God's going to fix it. My interior state of rapture or bliss, and even if I move past that through the four immaterial states and hit nibbana, if I don't act in a way that aligns with reality interiorly and exteriorly, I'm really of no earthly good. So I think, and when I share with sponsees and things, I emphasize action. I also emphasize an amorphous kind of faith, right? Because I'm not going to tell anybody what to believe. It's my belief today that I cannot tell anybody what their higher, they say, what is my higher power? What's a higher? You'll have to figure that out, right? So engaged Buddhism is a thing today, especially with our political structuring or destructuring. These constructs, I get what you're saying. The energetic levels, I understand there's like an intuitive space of where these things begin before they're pre-named, right? They're how do you, Kevin, think about action? Well, obviously I thought about it while you were speaking. You do this, you go to centers and give retreats and things. But a guy like me, I have to sit down and take people through the big book, and yet I find myself more and more also being interior oriented, But I also think that, otherwise I'm stuck in the unwholesome states where I'm prey to craving, but developing a wholesome, not only wishing someone well, not only wishing someone to be safe, but going out in the world and embodying that. I have a tough time doing that, but I think I need to do that. And
No.
I'm quiet now, I promise.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, John. I think it's vital because it's like, I don't spend that much, very much of my day meditating. And today happens to be a day when I'll do a few different teaching events, but the question of just how to live in the world is a really hard one, I think, for addicts, and that's what they tell us. It's a program of action, and And it can't all be like sponsoring people. Yeah, it has to, we have to find ways to make our lives meaningful for us. And that definitely takes some real, reflection and exploration. I found James Barr's Awakening Joy course and his book to be very helpful in that regard, kind of looking at what are wholesome activities, what are things I can do that I'll enjoy, use my time. And a lot of times for me, it means because of my own personality of tending towards passivity, it means agreeing to do things that people suggest, or thinking up things to do that are like activities. I mean, particularly at my age, without a regular job. Yeah, I mean, it's really important. It just sitting around and contemplating or feeling and the confluence of energies in our mind body doesn't fill the day. So I appreciate the reminder. Thank you. So we've run quite a bit over today, but everybody hasn't left, so hope that was of some benefit to people. I did not mention, I think, that I will be at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery tonight, 7:30, in person. Anybody who wants to drop in is more than welcome. And other than that, I will see you next week if I don't see you
Just make
in.
sure you can see where in the hell you're going. Don't trip.
Yeah,
I've been through
thanks.
that. Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? But it's great talk today, Kevin. Enjoy yourself.
Relax about the
Thanks, Steve.
eyesight.
See you next week.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank
Bye-bye.
you, Kevin.
Okay.
Bye.
All
Good
right.
healing to you.
Thanks, Ann.
You know?